Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Black holes, the cosmos, space, and time travel. Science and technology. Brought to you by theoretical physicist, futurist, popularizer of science, and world-renowned author, Professor Michio Kaku.
And GCNLive.com.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. On Science Fantastic, we profile some of the most amazing developments in science and technology. Science which touches your life. Science which gives you a new way to view the universe. With us today is an Associate Dean of Biological Sciences at the University of Chicago, Professor Neil Shubin, who's been on the show before. He's the author of Your Inner Fish. He's also the host of a TV program, but his latest book is called Some Assembly Required, Decoding 4 Billion Years of Life from Ancient Fossils to DNA. And also, if you want to find out more about Science Fantastic, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. Also on Facebook, we have 5 million fans on Facebook. I've written 5 New York Times bestsellers. The latest New York Times bestseller that I wrote is called The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. And it talks about, well, what I do for a living. I work on something called string theory, which we think is the fabled unified field theory, the God Equation, an equation perhaps no more than 1 inch long that will allow us to, quote, read the mind of God. These are the words of Albert Einstein, who started this quest to unify all the laws of physics into one comprehensive theory. But today we're going to talk about another theory, a theory which touches all of our lives directly, and that's the theory of evolution. So once again, our special guest today is Professor Neil Shubin. He is the Associate Dean of Biological Sciences at the University of Chicago, author of Your Inner Fish, and his latest book is called Some Assembly Required, Decoding 4 Billion Years of Life from Ancient Fossils to DNA. You know, when Charles Darwin proposed his theory of evolution, it was attacked from all sides, but also scientifically, because where is the missing link? Where is the life form that connects two very different life forms if everything came from one primordial life form? In other words, where is the missing link for humanity? Where is the missing link for fish, for mammals? And of course, we didn't know much back in the 1800s, but now we have a flood of paleological and, of course, genetic information that we're going to talk to Professor Shubin about. So, Neil, first question for you is, how did you as a youth first get interested in biology and also the Darwinian theory of evolution? What started it?
Yeah, thanks for that. And it was great to be here. Thanks for having me on again. I was always interested in science as a kid. I loved astronomy, geology. I loved going to museums. They were some of my favorite experiences as a youth. So that by the time I got into college, I came with sort of an interest in natural history, with the cosmology as well, extending to the physical world. And I took a course as a freshman at college, and it was taught by somebody who worked at a museum nearby. And he would bring fossils to class, or casts of fossils. And I remember thinking to myself, holy cow, you mean you can go out around the world, collect fossils that tell us about the history of the world? You know, I didn't realize that that was something that, you know, you could access so easily. And I didn't realize, let alone, that you can have a career in that. And it really captured my imagination. That is, by making predictions at home about looking at the right kinds of rocks and the right ages and so forth, that we can begin to answer big questions of our own existence. And sort of that was my entree to it. And since that time, that interest has has flowered in a variety of different ways, you know, from paleontology, I then extended to work in embryology, and later to molecular biology, all at the service of the same question, which is, how do the great transformations in the history of life happen?
Okay, well, your latest book is called Some Assembly Required. So could you please explain to us what is the meaning of your expression, some assembly required, when it applies to evolution?
Yeah, what I was thinking is, you know, how did life get assembled over time? You know, how did the diversity of organisms, of creatures that we see on the Earth today, how did that come about? You know, because we see a great diversity of creatures, from microbes to elephants to blue whales to flowers. And how did this diversity flourish? And what are the mechanisms that led to it? So what's the assembly process over 4 billion years? And so what that took me to was understanding, to ask the question, how do scientists approach these questions? How do scientists approach questions of origins? And, you know, in my training as a paleontologist and later a molecular biologist, so I wanted to sort of convey, you know, how we have these different tools to answer these questions, and importantly, how new science, how new technologies and techniques, which, you know, we couldn't have envisioned as much as 15 years ago, how they're changing, you know, how we do this science. So I wanted to pull it all together.
Okay, well, we've all seen that famous diagram of a chimpanzee walking, gradually becoming a caveman or Neanderthal, and then eventually becoming a modern human being. But the story of evolution, doesn't it have twists and turns and a lot of chaotic randomness and even going backwards? So that drawing is actually slightly misleading, right?
Well, it's entirely misleading. It's like, you know, evolution doesn't proceed as a line of progress, you know, going from chimp-like creature to chimp to more human, ever more human until you get to humanity. As you said, it you know, the evolution of life takes twists and turns, goes backwards, goes forwards, false starts, and so forth. And actually, that makes it far more interesting. Because, you know, what you have in evolution is a tree of life with different branches extending in different directions. And it doesn't necessarily proceed in this linear progress, which is, you know, it's sort of depicted in the diagram that you suggest, which you can just see by picking up any popular conception of evolution. And in fact, evolution couldn't happen in any other way. I think this sort of more chaotic, more back and forth twists and turns really tells us a lot about the process itself.
Okay, well, in your previous book, Your Inner Fish, you trace the evolution from fish to mammals that breathe air. Now, Darwin was criticized because he didn't have the missing link, linking fish to air-breathing mammals, but now we're beginning to complete the dots. So explain to us a little bit about how some assembly is required in the transition from fish to reptiles and to mammals.
Yeah, so when you think about it, you know, when you think about the transition of fish to land-living creature, you know, fish live in water, you know, land-living creatures obviously live on land, and that's a big revolution. You know, life in water versus life on land are very different things. So if you think about how that would happen, you know, there's a long list of features that would need to evolve to allow fish to live on land. You know, lungs versus gills, arms and legs, necks, all these sorts of things. Well, it turns out all the great inventions that were necessary for, you know, fish to invade land, to walk on land, actually came about in fish before the transition ever happened. That is, lungs, for instance, came about eons before fish ever took their first steps on land. And lungs evolved originally in fish that needed an accessory sort of organ to involve in respiration, you know, when the oxygen content of the water gets real low. Likewise, arms and legs, or portions of the bones of arms and legs, originally arose in fish as sort of appendages to help them walk on the water bottom and to live in shallow waters. So the take-home message is, nothing ever begins when you think it does, that, you know, many of the great inventions that were necessary for revolutions in the history of life actually came about well before the revolution. So really what evolution involved is, in some of these revolutions, is repurposing inventions and organs that already, you know, appeared years before, eons before. And we see that at the level of organs, such as lungs and arms and legs, but we also see it at the level of DNA and the genes that build.
Okay, well, let's take a short commercial break, and after the break, we're going to talk to Professor Neil Shubin. Some Assembly Required, talking about the fits and starts and randomness of evolution. And you're listening to Science Fantastic. Give us a call if you want to get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. The number to call is 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call letters in the radio station or the website and you're listening to, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on Science Fantastic.
Folks, looks like food shortages are here and gonna stick around. Supply chains are breaking down, and inflation is back with a vengeance. It's all part of the shortage economy. What used to be unthinkable is now in the headlines. Are you ready? Do you currently have a stockpile of emergency food at home? If not, go to MyPatriotSupply.com today, and you'll find an emergency food kit that's right for you and your family. My Patriot Supply is the largest preparedness company in America, serving millions of families like yours. Pick up a 3-month food kit that stays fresh for up to 25 years in proper storage. The meals in the kit provide over 2,000 delicious calories a day. That's important when you need to survive. Order from MyPatriotSupply.com and your food will ship fast in unmarked boxes to protect your privacy. Don't wait for permission or more empty store shelves. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
What better gift to give your loved ones than the gift of good health? And where better to buy those good health gifts than sunny-bay.com? Hey, it's great that you're hearing this message now, because buying your holiday gifts from Sunny Bay early will save you money. And that's just one reason why Sunny Bay is in business and has been for over 15 years, helping you with fashionable and useful products for better health. See our unique and quality made travel pillows or our unique neck and body wraps that help immediate pain relief and deep muscle relaxation. Come in a wide variety of uses. Apply hot or cold therapy, and they're all made in the U.S. See our great selection, affordable prices, and wonderful health products at sunny-bay.com. And remember, order early when our stock is high and shipping is fast. Just click sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com. And happy holidays from Sunny Bay.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Our special guest today is Professor Neil Shubin. He's the Associate Dean of Biological Sciences at the University of Chicago. He's also a TV host, author of the book Your Inner Fish, and his latest book is called Some Assembly Required. Now, Neil, on this program, we've had some people from artificial intelligence talk about how to design a human being, and they tell me that the human being is horribly misguided. I mean, all these defects of evolution that went to creating the human body. For example, your lungs and your breathing tube is right next to your eating tube, your esophagus. As a consequence, it's very easy to choke. It's very easy to have accidents take place in your neck. And if you were to design a human being from scratch, that is a robot, you would not want to design a robot that looks like us. Or look at our lower back. When you hit the age of 40 or so, your lower back goes out because of this tremendous pressure on your lower back because of a design flaw. When we started to walk upright, that put enormous pressure on the lower back, and that's why your back goes out. So is it true that if you were to redesign a human being from scratch, you would not put many of the things that we inherited from fish and from the apes? What are your thoughts?
Oh, yes. I mean, absolutely. There's just no way you would do that. I mean, you know, you discussed the example of backs and also the, you know, the same tube used for breathing as well as feeding is, you know, leading to a propensity for choking, which can be fatal. You know, by the way, one of the leading figures in all of vertebrate paleontology died of choking at a meal, you know, 40 years ago, before the Heimlich maneuver became prominent. But, you know, the list goes on and on. Our knees, many nerves and vessels and blood and so forth take roundabout paths. They don't go directly to their target organ. They take loop-the-loops that cause us all kinds of grief. And the reason for this is that evolution involves repurposing. Evolution is not designing creatures from scratch in each generation. It's using what exists, using the old to make the new. And that history sort of enforces certain constraints on the system and how it can change and how it can't change. And what that means is you're always tinkering. Evolution is a tinkerer, not a designer like an engineer. It's tinkering with what exists to make something new. And we see that at the level of organs, we see that at the level of cells, and we see that at the level of DNA. And in fact, our bodies are, there's a tremendous gap between how we evolve, the environments in which our species evolved in, and where we see ourselves today. And that disconnect between the present and the past causes all kinds of grief, causes us diseases, causes us to, our bodies to fail in certain ways. And, you know, you can think about that at so many levels as well, not just the physical, but also the way we perceive the world, the way information comes in the internet age with social media and so forth. You know, our brains and the ways we have communicated in the eons past in which we evolved, you know, really don't set us up for handling that very well. Yeah, so there's always this mismatch between our history as a species and where we find ourselves in the environments today, and that leads to our detriment. And that's actually an unfortunate example, you know, of evolution, obviously.
Okay, well, let's get back to your book, Some Assembly Required. And you talk about dinosaurs and feathers and how that changed the way we view one of the leading descendants of the dinosaurs, which are birds. So explain to us the discoveries that have been made that have forced us to rewrite the history of the dinosaurs with the discovery of feathers.
Yeah, so, I mean, just like lungs, honestly, you know, feathers are an invention that we associate with flight, right? You see them in birds, and feathers perform very well to support the function of flight in birds. But the reality is feathers did not evolve as creatures evolved to fly, as the ancestors of them evolved to fly. Feathers are really ancient, and they, you know, they preceded the origin of birds by a long way. Just like lungs preceded the land-living animals, the evolution of the land-living animals. And where we first see feathers is not in flying animals, but we see them in dinosaurs, in feathered dinosaurs, which, you know, were first came to light scientifically from discoveries in China in the mid-1990s. And since that time, you know, numerous different kinds of feathered dinosaurs have come about. And so then you can ask the question, you know, what's involved with the origin of bird flight? Well, you know, wings and feathers and hollow bones and high metabolisms, all these features that birds use to fly that are essential for flight in many ways, actually originally evolved in land-living dinosaurs that were fast-running. We see hollow bones, we see wishbones, we see wing-like structures, and, of course, we see feathers. And so you can ask the question, you know, what are feathers doing in dinosaurs? And they're clearly not supporting flight, but what they are supporting is thermoregulation. You know, downy coverings are really great to conserve heat, which is, and actually it's very important. If you're a hot-blooded animal, you're going to conserve heat in some ways. But also for courtship displays, and, you know, for recognizing mates and so forth. But both those functions are not flying. So just like the story with lungs, where lungs were repurposed from life in water to life on land. They already existed. The same thing's true with feathers. you know, that feathers already existed as well before birds took their first, you know, flaps into the air, and they had different functions. So much of evolution is not involving, say, new structures per se, but tinkering, using old structures in new ways. And I think that's the theme over and over again. I mean, if you think that lungs evolved as creatures evolved to walk on land, and feathers arose as creatures evolved to fly, you'd be in really good company, but you'd also be entirely wrong, you know. And that story is true again and again and again, that the invention that's necessary for a great revolution in the history of life pretty much always precedes the revolution it's associated with. It came out in a different context and then was just already there and redeployed.
And the question of flight, some people think that insects, when they fly, their wings were actually used as cooling devices to cool the eggs as they're hatching. And so all of a sudden, the wings that were used to regulate temperature in insects were used to fly when the insects were blown into the air. What are your thoughts about the different origins of flight? Because not just insects, but birds and different organisms can fly, like bats.
That's right. So you can envision a couple different modes of the origin of flight, and we see them. So one is, we'll call it, you know, trees down. That is, one area where flight, or, you know, powered or unpowered flight comes about is by having creatures that are arboreal, living in, you know, in the canopy of trees. And then those animals develop a membrane and, you know, begin to be gliders. And then from gliding, they gain power flight. So we call that trees down. And there are a number of, you know, creatures that have done this. You have flying frogs, flying snakes, you have flying lemurs, flying squirrels. You know, you see this ability to glide, and for gliding, not a gliding flight. We see that coming about many times independently from the trees down mode. So that's one form. And because flight has arisen multiple times in the history of life. The other form is ground up. And ground up is a little more complicated in the sense that, and this is what we think happened with dinosaurs, is that what you had is creatures that were incredibly fast running. You know, they were, you know, think about like Velociraptor and some of these critters that can, you know, that can really move fast, and they've evolved a predatory lifestyle that relies on speed. That the ability to spend ever longer times in the air, or even maybe spend some small times in the on rugged surfaces, enabled them to develop flying. You know, first some sort of minor powered flight, which, you know, ever longer leaps and jumps that eventually became the ability to take to the air. That's a different kind of thing, going from ground up. So we see ground up, trees down. Both those we know happen. And honestly, flight has arisen so many times in the history of life that there are certain sort of universals to it. That is, every creature that has evolved flight obviously has some sort of membrane or wing to enable it to fly, has a body that's been optimized to be a little bit lighter for its size, you know, less dense. It usually has a different kind of metabolism. So there's certain universals to it. But then each exemplar of the origin of flight, whether it's pterosaurs or gliding animals or birds or bats, has slightly different origins, you know, whether it's trees down or ground up.
And when you look at bats, isn't it true that there's almost like a one-to-one correspondence between the bones of your hand, of your arm, and the bones of the wings of a bat?
Yeah, so we even see, like, the wings themselves. Even though they're wings, they can be very different, and say, in bats and pterosaurs and birds. So in bats, like you say, it's basically a five-fingered hand with super long fingers with a membrane between those fingers. That's a bat wing. Whereas a pterosaur, you know, the flying reptiles, basically they have one extraordinarily long finger. No, they have the other fingers, but one's really, really long, almost the length of their body, and a membrane attaches
to them. We have to take another short commercial break, but after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of your book, Some Assembly Required. And our special guest today is Professor Neil Shubin, author of this book, Some Assembly Required. And you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org, or give us a call at 612-564-8135, and you can share your thoughts on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
USA Radio News with Wendy King.
White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says progress is being made in negotiations between congressional Democrats and the White House on the president's big $2 trillion social services and climate change programs.
Progress here is a historic package that will put in place systems and programs that have never existed in our society before. So I think what you're seeing is that we're getting closer. We're into the nitty-gritty details. There is agreement about some fundamental investments in our society.
The president noted that the final plan would no longer provide no-cost community college, but he hopes to increase Pell Grants to compensate for that loss. The Supreme Court will hear arguments over a Texas law prohibiting most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy on November 1st. Justices are allowing the law to stay in effect in the meantime. This is USA Radio News. Officials say a live bullet that was put into a prop gun and handled by actor Alec Baldwin went off and killed a cinematographer on the New Mexico set of the movie Rust. The Santa Fe Sheriff's Department said in a statement that Baldwin discharged the prop weapon and struck two people, Helena Hutchins, the film's director of photography, and the director, Joel Souza. Hutchins was flown to the hospital where she was pronounced dead. Baldwin tweeted, "There are no words to convey my shock and sadness regarding the tragic accident that took the life of Helena Hutchins, a wife, mother, and deeply admired colleague of ours." He says, "I'm fully cooperating with the police investigation to address how this tragedy occurred, and I'm in touch with her husband, offering support to him and his family. My heart is broken for her husband, their son, and all who knew and loved Helena." In a statement, the movie company said, "The production of the movie has been indefinitely halted." You're listening to USA Radio News.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, veterinarian and naturopathic physician. The Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy with an important message. Take charge of your health. Do not continue to blindly follow the system that has failed us all. I appreciate GCN listeners because you're open-minded and intelligent. If our system is so great, why is it that the United States, the USA, ranks nearly 60th worldwide in longevity and number one in obesity? All the while we spend more money than all the other countries combined annually on unnecessary health care procedures and toxic drugs. It doesn't take much to get on track. Not with the government or pharmaceutical companies, but rather you in control of your own health with a basic understanding of nutrition and supplementation. FDI Longevity has the finest quality health, sports, and energy supplements available. GCN listeners are invited to join our team of people who want to stay healthy well into old age. We are currently looking for specialists to represent FDI Longevity and Save America. To buy products at wholesale prices or join our business team, go to GCNteam.com. That's GCNteam.com. Support GCN. Get healthy.
Stop aging now. Restore those joints. Boost your strength. Because it's official. NutraMedical has released the most exciting, powerful anti-aging supplement on the market. Dr. Bill Deagle's Red Deer Velvet DR has been approved by the U.S. Patent Office. Imagine stem cell rejuvenation all in one capsule without huge expense. Dr. Bill MD discovered that as an unborn baby grows in the mother's womb, he or she does not deteriorate or physically age. Red Deer Velvet DR, like the uterus, provides 300 biomolecules and 6 hormones protected in one special DR capsule that delivers lipid packages directly into your circulation. This patented technology bypasses the stomach and is released into the small bowel unaltered by digestive enzymes and stomach acid. Remember, Red Deer Velvet DR. Improve endurance, simulate your immune system, increase learning ability, and even improve sexual libido with Red Deer Velvet DR. Click NutriMedical.com. That's NutriMedical.com. Or call toll-free 888-212-8871 and get on the road to a newer, rejuvenated, happier you.
Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Our special guest today, once again, is Associate Dean of Biological Sciences at the University of Chicago, Professor Neil Shubin. The book is called Some Assembly Required. Now, Neil, I once attended a talk by a physicist who talked about eyesight. And there's a molecule and chemical, opsin and rhodopsin, which are sensitive to photons, that is, particles of light, and it converts particles of light into electric impulses. And therefore, it apparently, the evolution of the eyeball did not take place independently, but almost all of them use this one chemical that is light sensitive to create eyesight. So what's the latest concerning the evolution of the eyeball?
Yeah, well, we know a lot about that, actually, and there's some really fascinating facts. First of all, opsin, that molecule, is special because it's known as a transmembrane protein. That is, it can take information from outside the cell and convey it to inside the cell. So the outside the cell is obviously the photons that hit it, and then it takes that and then changes conformation across and then takes that information inside a cell, which then can react appropriately. Now, when you think about an eyeball is a very complicated structure, and it differs a lot from sort of eyeballs of other creatures. Like in insects, you have compound eyes. In us, you have camera eyes. But one of the fundamental discoveries, which was really remarkable, and this came about in the 1990s, and people have been doing these sorts of experiments ever since, is that Walter Gehring, who had a laboratory in Switzerland, he sadly passed away a few years ago, but had a very influential lab in Switzerland, and he was looking at the genes that control eyesight, sort of the formation of eyeballs, I should say, in insects. And he noticed that there is a there are mutants in flies where they're born without eyes. They're completely eyeless. And he was able to trace the sort of the DNA that's behind that mutant. And it was a particular gene called eyeless. No surprise there. And when he looked at that gene, he was able to remove it and then make the protein from that gene, and found, really remarkably, that wherever he sort of injected that protein, it stimulated eye formation in the body of the fly. So when you injected that protein, say, in the leg, guess what you got? You got an eyeball there, a fly eye. On the wing, you got a fly eye there. So he found this was sort of a universal trigger for eye formation, which is really fascinating, but this way gets even better. Because when he chased the sequence of that fly gene, he found, well, mammals have that gene too. A version of it, I should say. It's not identical, but it's a version of that gene, called PAX6. And it's involved in, guess what, the development and the initiation of eye development in mammals, and including people as well. So this is kind of like your inner fly. And then it got even better. So when he took the mouse version of the protein, or even the human version of the protein, and injected it on a fly, guess what happened? It triggered eye development in a fly. So what this is showing is that sort of some of the genetic tools that are essential for eye development in eyes as different as the compound eye of an arthropod to the camera eye of a human or a mouse, that some of that genetic wiring is the same. So it's showing a certain universality to eye development, and obviously eye evolution as well. So we're finding sort of, and this is sort of a general theme, is we're finding sort of a general genetic and developmental toolkit that builds bodies as different as worms, flies, and people. And it sort of fits the theme we were talking about a little bit earlier, is that what you have is the origin of some feature in evolution, whether it's an organ or a genetic or developmental
process. Okay, Neil, we have to take another short commercial break, but after the break, we're going to continue a discussion of your book, Some Assembly Required, and we're talking about the evolution of eyesight. You're listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call at 612-564-8135 and have your thoughts heard on the Internet and 100 radio stations which carry Science Fantastic. Give us a call.
Do you want to give you and your loved ones premium nutrition right now? Hi. I'm Jamel Bookaboo from TeamG'day.com and the GCN Longevity Health Team. Get your premium nutrition formulated by world-renowned naturopathic doctor, Dr. Joel Wallach, at wholesale, or also become a distributor and earn income while supporting this broadcast. Go to TeamG'day.com via the shopping cart or contact form, and I'll get back to you with support personally. That's TeamG'day.com with Longevity. TeamG'day.com.
This is an important message. Do you have an IRA, 401k, or retirement account worth more than $100,000? Your portfolio may qualify for an IRS tax loophole that allows you to own physical precious metals inside of your retirement account. Want our free report that shows you how? We are WealthProtectionResearch.com, and we help investors connect with the top precious metal companies in America to own physical gold and silver inside their retirement account using this little-known but very powerful IRS loophole. To claim your free IRS loophole report today, just text the word GOLD to 48542. WealthProtectionResearch.com wants to get this information in your hands now so that you can protect your hard-earned investments. Text G-O-L-D to 48542 to learn more. When you text the word GOLD to 48542, we'll send you a secure link to download our IRS loophole report to show you how to start protecting your wealth with precious metals. Don't wait. Text the word GOLD to 48542 now. Wealth Protection Research. Text GOLD to 48542.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from walloffire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Walloffire.com.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Brought to you by Professor Michio Kaku. This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. You're listening to Science Fantastic. And if you want to know more about the program, go to my website, mkaku.org, mkaku.org. On Facebook, we have 5 million fans on Facebook. I've written 5 New York Times bestsellers. The latest New York Times bestseller is called The God Equation, The Quest for a Theory of Everything. And it's about what I do for a living. I'm a theoretical physicist, and we think that string theory could be the missing link. That is, the link that eluded Einstein in the last 30 years of his life. An equation perhaps no more than 1 inch long that will allow us to, quote, read the mind of God. We'll find out what all the excitement is about. In fact, it has split Nobel Prize winners. Some Nobel Prize winners are adamantly against the theory. Some are equally adamantly for the theory. Find out what all the excitement is about by getting a copy of the book, The God Equation. Well, Neil, when we last left off, we were talking about the evolution of the eyeball. Some people thought that the eyeball and eyesight developed independently in many different organisms. Physicists say, well, maybe, but there's also a single molecule that they've been researching, which seems to be the precursor for all the various variations of eyesight. So what's the latest concerning the evolution of our eye?
Yeah, when you think about that molecule you're talking about, it's called opsin, and there it's a family of molecules, opsins, that are very ancient, really. And so what you see is if you look at the evolution of sight, sort of the most primitive organs involved in sight are really simple patches of cells that have opsins in them that are photosensitive. Basically, they record a light signal, and the organism acts accordingly. Then you start to see, you know, over time, the evolution of different kinds of organs that can actually modulate that light, that can focus the light in different ways so that organisms can perceive light sight in different ways, and for their lifestyle. And again, opsins are involved in all those. And what we'll find is actually when you get to our branch of the tree of life, you know, we have a camera eye and we have those opsins as well. And part of the evolution in vertebrate organisms from fish to people is a great a diversification and evolution of those opsins. Because what you have is we have the ability to see color, you know, and red, green, blue, and so forth. And we're enabled to do that because we have opsins tuned, almost like the dye of a printer, to different wavelengths of light. And so much of the evolution in the ability to see has involved a, you know, evolution in these opsins, which have enabled us to perceive different wavelengths of light, which we perceive as colors. And you see that happening in fish. You see that happening in primates. You know, some creatures only see in black and white. Some creatures don't see in the full red, green, and blue. And part of our own evolution as a species is highly acute vision. And sort of the opsins are a big piece of that. But also is the evolution of the organ, the eye itself. And as we talked about, sort of the genetic toolkit that builds eyes, part of that is super primitive, hundreds and hundreds of millions of years old. You know, so it predates our species by a long period of time. So, you know, you see several great themes in evolution in this example. One is using the old to build the new, using old genetic pathways, old proteins, ancient proteins, I should say, for new functions. And the other is, you know, creatures adapt, you know, to their local environments, and you see sort of many different solutions to these problems, but all using the same general theme.
And isn't it true that bees can see colors that we can't? For example, ultraviolet is a, quote, color, unquote, beyond violet, that is very useful for them to find flowers when there's an overcast. And isn't it also true that certain women have a fourth way of looking at colors that some men do not? And there's a genetic mutation that allows them to see four colors. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's right. So basically what you have is a protein, these opsins, and that protein sometimes can duplicate. And when it duplicates, sometimes the duplicate can get new functions. And we see that in the example of, some, say, fish that have four different opsins and can perceive four and integrate four different wavelengths of light. And so, you know, there's lots of variation here. You know, and evolution is happening all the time, all around us. And so the evolution, as your question suggests, the evolution of eyes can take many forms. That is, you can have evolution of the proteins that are the sort of the light receptor proteins, but you can
let's take another short commercial break. And once again, you are listening to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Give us a call if you want to get on the air. 612-564-8135 is the number to call. Leave your name, call letters at the radio station or the website, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on 100 radio stations and the internet carrying Science Fantastic. Give us a call.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who've helped people that have been injured or wronged. Have you been diagnosed with cancer? Are you one of the millions who have taken Zantac or other generic versions of this popular drug to help treat stomach issues? Then pay close attention to this message. The FDA said it detected low levels of a probable cancer-causing chemical known as NDMA in Zantac and other generic forms of this popular drug. They've banned sales and even removed it from the market. If you've been diagnosed with cancer and you've taken Zantac or a generic equivalent, call the legal helpline now. You could receive a free cash award and have your medical expenses covered. And there's no upfront cost to you. They only get paid if you win. So please call now. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. 800-998-7173. That's 800-998-7173.
Do the letters IRS give you anxiety? I'm Dan Pilla. I've defended people from the IRS for more than 40 years. My book, How to Get Tax Amnesty, created the tax resolution industry and is responsible for helping hundreds of thousands of people. It can help you too. If you're a non-filer or facing IRS enforcement right now, your case is unique. You need real help, not cookie-cutter advice. My clients get my personal attention. Buy my book at danpilla.com and get a free consultation directly with me. That's danpilla.com. Let's start solving your tax problem right now.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. 800-985-1610. That's 800-985-1610.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
This is Science Fantastic.
Welcome back to Science Fantastic with Professor Michio Kaku. Today we're talking about evolution, the fact that it's not a straight line, but there are many fits and starts and randomness and accidents in the evolution of us. We had talking to Dr. Neil Chubin. The book is called Some Assembly Required, Decoding 4 Billion Years of Life from Ancient Fossils to DNA. Well, when we last left off, we were talking about the evolution of the eye. Isn't it true that some women can see not just the three colors, red, blue, green, but actually four colors? Is that true?
That I don't know that that's actually true, and that in, that they can truly see four different, CYAN. That I think they still have the same number of opsins that we have. It's not an extra opsin; it may be something more hardwired in the way that the signal is integrated in the brain. So remember that the way sight travels is you have the the photons entering the eye, and then it hits a membrane that contains the opsins. And then an electrical signal is sent to the brain, and it's in the brain where that image is processed. So much of the processing of images doesn't happen, say, in the eye, although some of it does, but a lot of it happens in the brain. So I'm not really sure where that, where that ability comes from in that system from eye to brain. But that being said, many different creatures, have the ability to see, a broader spectrum of wavelengths than we can. And by the way, we're still pretty good. We can see, broader wavelengths than some of our primate cousins simply because we have an extra opsin in there. But one thing to keep in mind is also, colorblindness is much more common in males than females, and there's a good genetic basis for that. It's more common, but I guess 1 out of 10 males, in the U.S. at least, I don't know about other countries, in the U.S. at least, 1 out of 10 males has colorblindness, whereas it's much, much, much rarer in females.
Now, you have one chapter in your book about monsters. So what do you mean by monsters, and how do mutations affect our understanding of how evolution proceeds?
Yeah, so there's, if you think about the study of bodies, people have really had a scientific study of monsters for centuries that is looking at birth, different body forms that happen in birth, congenital anomalies, we call them. People with, or animals with two heads, extra limbs, so those sorts of things that differ from the norm. And so what genetics has long done is taken that concept of monsters and sort of used it as a basis for understanding genes. That is what scientists realized working in the early part, early 1900s, say 1910 to 1930, 1940, that they can use an understanding of mutants and a genetic understanding of mutants that have defects in certain ways to understand normal genes. So, for instance, if I have a mutant fly that does not have eyes and I can breed that true, and I can find the piece of the DNA that's involved in that, clearly that defect, that gene that's been mutated, has a role in eye development, and in fact a very profound role in eye development. So what you can do is you can see the mutants, so you can breed them true, and then you can isolate the DNA to see what's involved there, what's causing that mutation. And typically what you're finding in that mutation is a gene that's involved in the normal process of development. So if you have a creature that has a mutant that has, say, extra fingers, and you isolate that DNA is going to be involved in the formation of fingers in normal animals. So that's how the study of monsters slash mutants got important in the study of genetics, because what a lot of genetics begins with is an understanding of mutants in different ways to try to isolate the kinds of genes that are involved in different, processes in development. And that's been really, really an important and critical phase. There have been a number of Nobel Prizes awarded to that over the last few decades.
And you also mentioned the Hox genes, genes that actually regulate the body plan of a human body, arms, legs, and so on and so forth. So explain to us a little bit about the Hox genes and how, in some sense, our body plan is encoded in our DNA.
Yeah, that's a really fascinating story. And again, began with flies. So work at Columbia University in the 1920s and 1930s revealed some mutants where body parts were in the wrong place. So they found a mutant where there was a leg where an antenna should be, or there was a mutant called bithorax, where there were two thoraxes on the animal and had multiple sets of wings. And these were particular mutants. So what they did is they isolated these mutants, but they had no DNA technology back in the 30s and 40s. And it really wasn't until the 80s and 1970s, 1980s, where people were able to isolate these mutants, isolate the DNA, and find out these genes that are involved in placing the right organs in the right part of the body. Well, that's really exciting enough just in flies. But it got more exciting when they found that those genes that you see in flies actually are related to the genes that are seen in people and in mice and in fish, and we have more copies of them. So these bodybuilding genes are present throughout animal life, and we have them too, and they're involved in our early development. So these genes, these Hox genes, are turned on and off at certain critical stages of development, and they are involved with the right placement of organs in our bodies. They control the development of our backs, in part, the pattern of our backs, the pattern of our limbs, and the pattern of numerous organs. So what it seems like when you look at these, take these data at face value, is that there is a common genetic and developmental toolkit that builds bodies as different as flies, mice, fish, and people. And that's a really profound insight, because what we can begin to do is to assess the question is, what genetic processes and genes and genetic and developmental processes differentiate a fish from a person or a chimpanzee from a person? We can begin to ask at the molecular level, what are the genetic differences among species? And, how do those genes drive those differences? And so it's a particularly exciting time to be involved in the field.
Okay, well, unfortunately, we have run out of time. Once again, our special guest has been Professor Neil Shubin, author of the book, Some Assembly Required, Decoding 4 Billion Years of Life from Ancient Fossils to DNA. So, Neil, once again, thank you so much for being on Science Fantastic.
Thanks. Cheers.
Good. And once again, if you want to get on the air, you can always give us a call at 612-564-8135. Leave your name, call in to the radio station you're listening to or the website you're listening to, and the city you're calling from, and bingo, maybe you can get on 100 radio stations that carry Science Fantastic. So stay tuned every week on Science Fantastic. We profile the amazing world of science.
Now with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system.
Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, AmeriCare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase Nano Colloidal Silver now at ImmuneSupportNow.com. That's ImmuneSupportNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.